Our next speaker is Dr. Christopher Howson, and Dr. Howson is our Vice President for Global Programs at the March of Dimes, and as such, he's responsible for developing the Foundation's international outreach. Prior to joining the March of Dimes in 1998, just a few years ago, Chris served as Director on the Board of International Health and Acting Director of the Medical Follow-Up Agency of the National Academies Institute of Medicine in Washington, D.C. Chris is an epidemiologist and an author and editor of many, many papers and publications on global health. His professional interests focus on assessing preventive health needs in middle and low-income countries and partnering with country experts to help design and implement public health interventions in response. His recent work is centered on the creation of international networks, and that actually is something we'll learn more about in his remarks. The title of his talk today is Born Too Soon, The Global Action on Preventing Preterm Birth. So please welcome Dr. Howson.
Thank you very much, Janice. Good afternoon, everybody. I hope you're having a good time. And this may be a relatively small group, but I'm going to tell you you're a very select group because you're here at a session that probably embodies the theme of this APHA conference more than anything else, and that's think globally but act locally. And notice they use the term global and not international, because global also means we're thinking about the United States. Preterm birth, as I will show you, is a shared problem internationally, globally, and it needs shared solutions. So the world needs the U.S. and the U.S. needs the world. And I'm going to share some of this with you. I have no conflicts to disclose. I'm going to talk about a report that came out in May of 2012 that was called Born Too Soon, the Global Action Report on Preterm Birth. I want to talk about why Born Too Soon was born so late, why it took until May 2012 for a report like this to come out. I'm going to talk a little bit about the key findings and recommended actions in the report. And I'm also going to talk about some of the aspects of the report that relate to prevention. And I'll address prevention in a moment. Some of the unique benefits of prevention and the reasons contributing to its invisibility. And then I'll talk a little bit about what can be done immediately to accelerate prevention of preterm birth in high-income countries and also in middle and low-income countries. Now, why was Born Too Soon born so late? Well, you all know about the Millennium Development Goals. They were 8 goals set up in 1990 with a target date of 2015 to focus the world's attention on issues of global health importance. They were incredibly important because they provided a benchmark, number one, a target for people to go to and a benchmark at which to kind of gauge your progress annually. And there were 2 MDGs relating to areas around preterm birth, both under 5 mortality and maternal. MDG 4 was the one to reduce child mortality by 2/3 between 1990 and 2015. The maternal mortality one was to reduce the maternal mortality ratio by 3/4. Now, I'm going to say something that is very provocative and runs against the grain because a lot of people have felt that the MDGs were sacrosanct, something very important. And indeed, they have been absolutely imperative in focusing the world's attention. And I'm going to show you they've been a cause for great global good. But I also think they've had 3 unintended consequences that have not been so good. One is that they focused on under 5 mortality. And as I'm going to show you, it hid an area of that time frame, basically the neonatal period, the first 28 days of life, in which the needs were very different and which the causes were different. And so because of that, I think we have kind of not moved toward MDG 4 as quickly as we could. The second is that the MDGs, with their focus on mortality, have focused us on a few very high mortality countries in sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. Now, this is critically important because any child dying is absolutely unacceptable. But the problem with this is that in the shuffle, in the focus on this, the needs of other low-income countries with perhaps lower mortality, and also what we call the forgotten tier of middle-income countries, which have been crying for help, were somehow left behind. And I think the third unintended consequence was, because of focusing on mortality, prevention kind of got left behind. And I'm going to talk about the unique aspects of prevention and kind of why, and I'm sure all of you in this audience as public health people know why it's so hard to do prevention. So why was it born so late? Oops, I'm going the wrong way, I think. Here we go. In 2000, okay, this was 10 years after the MDG4 was instituted, you had this pie chart done by WHO in which it showed the causes of under 5 death. You'll notice that there's nothing about neonatal death. It didn't provide any estimates. Essentially, newborn deaths were invisible in 2000. Then you had progress toward the MDG4. And you see here, from 1990 to 2011, the rate dropped from 87 to 51, which was a 41% decrease. That was a fairly substantial and, I think, very laudatory decrease. You see how much it will have to decrease in addition to hit the MDG target. But the reason I think that that curve could have been steeper, and you'll see that on the line on the bottom, that was the corresponding decrease in neonatal deaths. They were not similar to the under 5 deaths, and that's because the world's attention was not focused on that time period. Had they had been, perhaps that curve would have been steeper, and the MDG curve would have been steeper as well. So when people started paying attention to neonatal health, and that pie chart you saw from 2000 was reconstituted in 2011, what you saw here was something completely different. Number one, neonatal deaths account, and some data out just 2 days ago, in fact, show that neonatal death account not for 40%, but for 44% of under 5 deaths. And that you can see here with preterm birth, the complications are 14% of under 5 death, and you have intrapartum and other events that actually, if you were to look at some of the misclassification issues around perhaps the other causes of death like sepsis and intrapartum related, it might raise that proportion due to preterm birth higher. So the key findings and recommended actions from the Born Too Soon report. Number one, it was a unique report, really. It was the first ever report with comparable country estimates for 184 countries. Never before had been done. It was a global report in process as well as content. We had over 80 experts working on it. Over 50 organizations signed on to it. It was truly a global endeavor and represented the best in the global community on that. And what it showed was what I said right at the outset. Preterm birth is a global problem. It's essential for progress toward 2015 and beyond. It's a problem shared by rich and poor countries, as I'll show you, with more than 1 in 10 live births worldwide affected. It's a problem that has affected us all, either directly or indirectly. And because of this, the findings of these reports, this report generated intense media interest. There were 5 messages in Born Too Soon. The first were that there were 15 million babies born too soon every year, and about 1.1 million of these babies died. And for a large number of the survivors, many face a lifetime of significant disability. So this is a major, major crisis. As a result, preterm birth is now the leading cause of neonatal death at 35. It's currently the second leading cause of under 5 death after pneumonia. Now, when you look at the rates of preterm birth, you can see right here what I said earlier. It truly is a global problem. You see it focused, as a lot of conditions are, in sub-Saharan Africa and countries of South Asia, but you can also see the U.S. is a high-income country that has extremely high rates. And in fact, the U.S. ranks 131st in terms of its rate. In other words, there are 130 countries out of the 184 we looked at whose rates are equal to or better than those in this country. So it is a shared problem, and we need shared solutions. So these were the five main findings. As I said, 15 million born. Preterm birth rates are rising in most of the countries we analyzed. The message was prevention must be accelerated. Premature babies can be saved. This is very important because there are two interventions alone, kangaroo mother care and antenatal cortical steroids, which if given to all women of need and in all settings could save over 750,000 of those newborn lives. And then everybody has a role to play. I think Dr. McCabe said that very clearly and eloquently for what we're doing in the U.S. Now let me turn to the issue of prevention, because as I mentioned, prevention has kind of got left behind. There's a critical need for prevention internationally because it has some unique benefits, and there's also reasons contributing to its invisibility. The benefits is, number one, it can reach a broad population and be highly cost-effective. You all know this in the room. For example, you have conditional cash transfers to promote the birth in a facility. And as Dr. McCabe said, in the U.S., insurance, and I love this, protects against preterm birth. It's the same thing in poor countries. You need to get those women into the facilities where they can get care, and indeed during the preconception period as well. The second thing is, because of overlapping risk factors, preventive interventions for one condition can often reduce risks for multiple adverse outcomes. So you take birth defects and preterm birth, they're common risk factors like diabetes, like weight issues, like sexually transmitted infections. If you address one, you're going to address a number of adverse outcomes of pregnancy. Preventive interventions at one stage of life can have a cascade of beneficial effects throughout life. So if you detect diabetes in a young woman and get her under control before she becomes pregnant, she'll have less chance of having a low birth weight baby. Because if that baby is born low birth weight, and it happens to be female or male, it will be the same, they'll have a higher risk in adulthood of developing diabetes themselves. And for that woman who has a higher risk of diabetes, she in turn will then have a higher risk of having a low birth weight baby herself. So you have this vicious intergenerational cycle of risk. Prevention can break that. And preventive interventions have a lot of other benefits as well. For example, educating girls and young women can empower them in societies. And evidence shows that the best way to drive a country forward is to educate its female workforce and empower them. And then finally, prevention requires effective communication and collaboration across medical specialties and across public health categories. So you really need the adolescent docs talking to the OBGYNs, talking to the neonatologists, talking to the pediatricians. And you need the nutrition people talking to the chronic disease people, talking to the infectious disease people, in order to have that kind of seamless interaction that is so important for prevention. Now, prevention is a very hard sell. And Harvey Feinberg of the Institute of Medicine wrote a wonderful article a few weeks ago in which he detailed some of these things. There's a reason why policymakers, donors, and the public have such a hard time grasping it. Number one, success is often invisible. I mean, with care, you've got a very tight time frame. That baby is taken care of. Their intervention's being given, and that baby's going to live or die. And it's very easy, or it's much easier, to detect an association between the intervention and the outcome. With prevention, that outcome may be given a lot further upstream. So, for example, preconception, health education. If that contributes to improved birth outcomes, it's very, very hard to make that link sometimes because of intervening factors and other things. So it's just more difficult to assess effect. There's a lack of drama when it comes to prevention. I mean, when you have care, you have an emergency situation, people are running around, a little baby's life hangs in the balance. It's very gripping emotionally. But if you show a picture of a healthy baby and say, this baby is healthy today because of prevention, it's not going to sell. And also, as Harvey Fineberg says, that's why we have programs in the U.S. on TV called ER. We don't have a PR, a prevention room, because advertisers are not going to pay for people to sit around watching a woman take folic acid or get a, you know, an MMWR shot for an hour. It just doesn't work. Access to health services in which preventive interventions can be difficult and expensive to effect. We all know behavior change is a difficult thing to implement, and it requires multiple contacts with the healthcare system. If you have a healthcare system in which quality is not good or people treat the patients badly, they're not going to come back, and that causes a major problem. So you need to improve the healthcare system and the quality of care in order to improve prevention. Prevention also can conflict with personal, religious, and cultural beliefs. I mean, there are issues around family planning, for example, in a country like Chile or the Philippines. You just can't talk about it. And yet it's the most effective, one of the most effective early interventions that you can give for preterm birth. And then the last is solution in certain instances are not readily at hand. And this is particularly pertinent with preterm birth in developed countries where we really don't know how to prevent it yet. So there is a real requirement for the kinds of discovery research that may take time, but will yield incredible benefit, but they're not there, so you can't give them to the public. It makes it very difficult. So what can be done immediately? I just kind of gave that bummer slide, but I'll tell you that there's a lot that can be done. Now, talking about high-income countries, we and our partners published this paper in The Lancet in 2012 on World Prematurity Day, which looked at the very high Human Development Index countries. So that's where the data were available. And we identified the five most important drivers of preterm birth in those countries. And you can see there, smoking cessation, single embryo transfer, cerclage, progesterone, and the reduction of C-section and labor inductions. We found that with the application of those five interventions to all women who could use them, you'd only get a relatively modest 5% reduction in risk. But that's not trivial. That's 58,000 lives saved a year and $3 billion in saving. But what that paper showed that particularly, at least for the high-income setting, there is a need for research. And there's a lot being done right now. I mean, the March of Dimes is supporting research on transdisciplinary centers and developing more centers to do this work. And there is also a group being put together with March of Dimes leadership in collaboration with leadership from the National Institute for Child Health Development, the Gates Foundation, and associated groups that are really putting together for what they call a solution pathway for research, identifying priorities for discovery, development, and delivery research, raising awareness of the impact of preterm birth, growing financial commitments for discovery, development, and delivery research, and then seeking opportunities to align research and priorities so that it will reduce redundancy, have a more coordinated process of research, and give a lot more transparency for that. Now, with respect to middle and low income countries, let me talk first about high rate, high mortality countries. Those were the ones I showed you. There are things that we can do right now, and that should be done right now to prevent preterm birth. Number one, antenatal corticosteroids, as I mentioned. You could save 430,000 lives off the bat. Family planning, extremely important to kind of drive down rates of adolescent pregnancies, a very high, very strong risk factor. Government-funded cash transfers to get women to deliver in facilities where they can get good care. developing in an implementation of quality improvement packages, those actually are very demanded and in need by these high mortality, low income countries, just to provide a better standard of care for when that mother does go into labor and the baby is born. And then providing food vouchers, a very simple thing for pregnant women with in countries with the highest number of newborn deaths. Now, for those other countries that I said kind of have gotten left behind in the shuffle, the lower rate, low income countries and middle income countries, and this, by the way, is where the high mortality countries are moving as they develop. We're moving into this scenario, so we as an international community begin to need to start moving toward this scenario as well for the future. Family planning, again, including birth spacing and provision of adolescent-friendly services, and the services part of it is extremely important. Prevention and management of sexually transmitted infections and other infections, and chronic diseases like hypertension and diabetes, which increase risk. School-based education in life transition skills for girls and young women, so it promotes healthy nutrition, and reduces lifestyle risks like smoking, recreational drug use, and other things. And also community-based campaigns, which are needed to address a lack of knowledge in the communities and prevalent misconceptions that exist, and indeed there are some. Finally, to talk about recommendations, we need further research on things like what can be done to reduce risks before and between pregnancies, and particularly on around a consensus for the kinds of packages of programs that can be given. So how, for example, to integrate nutrition interventions into broader programs? How can we effectively intervene to prevent adolescent and repeat adolescent pregnancies? What can we do to provide effective STI, HIV diagnosis and management? And how can these be adapted to be maximally kind of friendly to adolescents? And then finally, how can we task shift to community health workers so that they can screen for chronic conditions among adolescent women and before pregnancy and take the kinds of appropriate actions that are needed? Very simple, very low cost. These need to be evaluated and these need to be implemented, and a lot could be done. So, you know, I just want to end up. The Born Too Soon was an incredibly important report. I mean, it provided the data, the tools, the global commitment to strengthen prevention and care. There's a lot in there. We need to act on it. We need to move forward. And I guess the question for all of us that remains is, will we deliver? So thank you so much.
So this might be one time when early delivery would be welcome, right? Okay. Thank you, Chris.